Hi, guys. Welcome to the coffee break. Got to get my coffee. How's everybody doing? What?
Coffee for a coffee break? Are you kidding?
I know, right? What is this, Solbu? A sandwich break?
Woman in the background.
Dang, that's loud. I've got. Yeah, look at that. Yeah, I'm swiping. Look, I'm doing a Sasha.
Who's here? Oh, I see Solbu. I see Peter. I see Lanceman 63. I see BP9. And there's somebody in the middle. There's Ron Morissette. Hey, buddy.
Yeah.
Where, Robbie?
I had the, because I'm remoted into the computer there, so the window that says joined by audio was covering Ron completely. Oh, there's somebody there. Everybody have a good weekend?
Yeah.
I did. I completely vegged out. I did not even think about work or news or any of that. I just binge watched a bunch of YouTube, a bunch of folks
You mean to tell me you had an actual weekend?
I did.
Wonderful.
I did. I said I've had enough. I'm just gonna go fantasize for a while.
I kind of figured that.
I was watching a YouTube series of a couple who have bought a boat and they're literally sailing around the world.
Oh, right now?
Nice.
Well, not now. They're isolated.
Okay.
They're somewhere in Tonga. They're stuck.
Yeah, because everyone knows you can't be isolated in a small sailing boat. Just a couple in the boat.
Oh, sure you can be. That's about as isolated as you can.
That's pretty isolated to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, they have to stop to get water and food and all that.
Right.
Yeah. They can travel. You know. They just can't go to any ports.
Maybe that's
true.
It, yeah.
That's true. Yeah. So, but yeah, that would be the life. But, well, it would be, except I couldn't stand it. I don't think that would be something I would be able to do.
I think I would love it for about maybe a month.
It would be a good holiday for sure, but hard work. The way you look at those, you know, when you look at those videos and all the work that they have to do on the boat just to keep it running, it's crazy. Yeah. It's amazing.
So. That'd be neat, though, to like find an island where you can, you know, in the boat out off the shore and swim in and have a campfire.
Oh, yeah.
Fishing.
It's like I'm guessing my image is frozen, but I can still hear you. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, you're back.
Oh, okay. They have a dinghy hanging off the back of the boat and, They just use it to go into
that's perfect.
They go into port and yeah, it's a big old catamaran. That's what they've got. It's a twin hull thing, which is good because it's very stable compared to the mono hulls.
Yeah,
but expensive too. I mean, that's not chump change at all.
Yeah,
but yeah,
I can't wait just to get up to the cottage, let alone doing that. Like just to be secluded enough as far as how our cottage is.
Yeah.
The
difference there is you've got somewhere solid on the ground, and I think that's the part that bothers me. I feel like I've got to have something solid that I can say, this is my home base, right?
Yeah.
I can go fly in the aeroplane or play in a boat or whatever for weeks or months or whatever, but at some point I've always got to come back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've got to call something home. That's the only way it could work for me. So
do they have a sailboat or a powerboat?
Both. It is a sailboat, but they have an engine in each hull.
Yes.
So they can run one or both engines in case the wind drops completely. Yeah.
Cool.
So,
money. Lots of money.
Oh, yeah. It is not cheap by any means. It was something like 300 grand to buy that boat.
Yeah.
So that was US. That was US
plus
dollars.
Operating costs.
That was US dollars, Robbie. So that's probably $1 million Canadian. I don't know.
Why are we all laughing? It's the truth.
I've got to stop, messing with you, Robbie.
That's the price of a good house. that's the price of a good house, though, let alone one that is just on the water. It's got to have nice amenities.
One of the reasons I bought an early model Cessna is because they're a lot cheaper and they're a lot simpler. I don't know if I was on this chat when I talked about that, but
I
could have bought a brand new Cessna 172 if I'd wanted to pay literally $500,000. I'm sorry. I have a problem with paying more for my airplane than my house. I'm not doing it. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. You just need a cheap house in somewhere tropical that makes it justifiable.
Right? No.
That you can fly to. Really. Yeah. So do you get up in the air these days? Anyway. Like with everything that's been going on, do you still get to fly?
I cannot, because the plane just went in for its annual.
I see.
Which is an annual inspection that has to happen every year. The annual expired in April. And I have to fly with an instructor to get my BFR out of the way, my biannual flight review.
So you have to do that every 2 years? You have to go and get tested?
Yes,
wow.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Just ride with an instructor. They do an interview on the ground for an hour or so to make sure you still have a good knowledge of the air, rules of the air, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Problem is, there are no instructions flying because of the current
issues. Yeah.
So, there may be some that are still flying. I probably have to wear a bandit's, be a bandit and see if we can do that. But currently I've got to get the annual done on the aircraft and then I can get my
flight review
BFR out of the way. Yep. And once I've got them out of the way, I can go aviate. So that would be my plan. But my plan was to do that months ago. But of course, with the current situation, instructors weren't flying at all. So
yeah. And in hindsight, part of you probably feels like, oh, I wish I had that right now, because then you could be flying.
Absolutely.
Just getting out, right?
I could get out. I was out at the airport yesterday, but I couldn't fly. It was a pretty day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even if anybody wanted to risk getting in the airplane with me, they probably, to be smart, they probably shouldn't do it. So
now, is your plane big enough? You've got enough room that you could put someone in the back. And
I got four seats.
Yeah.
I got four seats, three plus me. So it's a 172. It's a 172. Yep. So, but not big enough that we could maintain 6 feet of separation. So.
Yeah. I gotcha.
Yeah. I don't have
just hang on to the wing.
I don't have one of them Citation jets or anything crazy like that now. You know, don't be getting
too
carried away.
There's a solution to that. If you everyone need to have a small oxygen mask, and then you just take out the front window and the back window, and then everything blows up.
It'd be pretty blowy, that's for sure. Yeah. All I would have to do is crank up the engine. That propeller would generate enough wind, because it's right in front of the cockpit, right? It's right in front of the pilot seat. So without that, and by the way, just so you know, Solbu, if there's no windshield in that aeroplane, it's not staying up in the air, because that acts as a big old air scoop and generates so much drag that that the wings can't generate enough lift to keep the thing up in the air.
That's probably a good safety feature, that it can't fly without the windshield.
You won't get very far. The last thing you want is...
Just steer very clear of seagulls, yeah?
Well, the last thing you want is a bird strike. That is the last thing. I know one person who got a bird strike in the air, and the bird visited him in the cockpit, because it busted right through the windshield.
Oh man!
But he safely landed. He landed safely, and luckily he does like I do, and we fly airport to airport, so there's always one ahead of you and always one behind you whenever you do it.
So they're watching for you to arrive.
So how did they prevent bird strikes in a biplane?
Well, a biplane only has a dinky little windshield.
Yeah.
There's really not much to worry about in a biplane. You're wearing
reach forward and just
That's it.
Shoo it aside.
And you've got goggles on, and you've got probably a mask over your. And if you don't have the mask on, then you're probably going to get some feathers in your mouth, but oh well, you know, just deal with that. So.
And you'd be under 10,000 feet.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. I don't go above 10,000 feet. I've been there. It's nice up there, but you don't go above 10,000 feet, not without oxygen anyway.
So you don't have a pressurized cabin?
Oh, no. Oh, come on. It's a 172. No.
It's I don't know what it has.
This it conversation is. Reminds me of I don't know his name, the front singer of Iron Maiden. He is a captain in one of the big jumbos. He flies around, I think he flies for an Icelandic airliner.
But, was this another video you? Was this another video that you saw, Solbu,
a couple of years ago?
I knew it had to be a video involved.
But he was. Each time they are out playing, they are using a big jumbo jet, a two-story.
You're not thinking of the actor John Travolta, are you? He has jet, and he actually parks. Somewhere in, I think it's in Florida somewhere that he has.
John has his own. He has have his own airport, but Iron Maiden. They fly around the plane. The front singer is the pilot, and he was on Norwegian TV some years ago. And then he talked, and he was asked, why they're flying their own plane. Surely they could afford to fly a commercial flight. And then he explained that the only reason they are doing that is because of one of the band members who is afraid of flying unless he is flying.
Interesting. Okay. So, can you hold on for just a second? Peter, you are overdriving that microphone so hard that you are causing distortion, just so you know. You're overdriving that microphone big time, Peter.
Yeah, it's too loud. So, but the call sign that they use on the Iron Maiden flights is, I don't remember the two letters, but then 666 is a kind of running joke.
Some
traffic controllers when they are talking back to him, they are talking to Ed Force One.
nice. Now, Robbie, it's not going to be long before you're up to episode 666 of Category 5. Are you just going to skip that episode, or
what do we do? Do we use the green screen and I dress up as Lucifer himself?
I don't know. You figure it out. I
know what you can do. There is actually, it's not maintained anymore, but at one point in time, there was an Ubuntu flavor who was called Ubuntu Satanic Edition. You could do that.
We should get like one of those chip manufacturers on an interview for episode 666. Talk about the mark.
I remember an article about the Satanic Edition. And in the install instructions at the time, it said that in order to install this, you first have to install Ubuntu Christian Edition. You had to install that first.
Oh, no.
That's better.
Much better. Much better.
Let me drink a lot of Red Bull because you got wings. Sorry. I had a video of Robbie. Is it better? Is the video better, Robbie?
It does look a little better.
Yeah, it's better.
Yeah, that's
and it's and you are actually having light on your face and not just a black. So the camera is better.
Definitely progress, Peter. And it's nice to see your face rather than like your elbow.
or the light on the top of your ceiling.
Yes.
the camera was dark. The drivers were about 240p, and I couldn't move it at all.
Oh, see, his camera was set to 240p.
Figured as much. I thought it was just out of focus, or the lens needed washing or something.
You could see that kind of like pixelation though, like it was just not able to focus at all.
Sure.
I wanted one, by the way, to come in the 1st of July. So we go away a month.
You were going to be going away?
No, I said I ordered another one.
Oh, but it's coming. It's going to take that long to get here.
Yeah.
Ah, okay. Yeah, that's the thing about orders right now. You just never know when they're going to arrive.
Or they are playing it safe and then telling that it's going to take that long, and then it's showing up maybe next week.
The next day.
Yes. Well, I just ordered some parts for my clothes washer. It's 20-some years old, and it's finally having problems with the agitator. There are two parts to the agitator. The bottom part is what swishes the clothes around, and the top part is an auger. It pushes the clothes down into the – well, that top part has stopped working. I could hear stuff grinding inside that part. I thought, okay, something's not quite right with that. So one of the nice things about Sears is that even though
– you guys still have Sears?
Well, the Sears website is still active, and the Sears Parts Direct website is still active, and so you can still get.
I was just thinking of Sears yesterday. I was like, because they went bankrupt here in Canada. So
they did here too. I think so. I don't know who's, but you still have the parts lists, and the part numbers and all.
Oh, okay. So it's just manual.
This is one of the reasons I like Sears, because it's got you've still got the part numbers. And
it's user serviceable. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So I had a look, and it looks like a fairly easy, fairly simple fix. So I ordered the parts. They should be here by Friday.
Yeah. Very nice.
And it's not that that long ago that most things that you bought came with, if you open the backside or a panel, inside it was glued.
Schematics.
Parts number and how to do this, put it together.
Yeah.
I just fixed my Whirlpool dryer. It's about 20 years old as well. And I fixed it, I don't know, 5-6 times. I just won't let the thing die.
I do the same with my Kenmore. I just fix it over and over.
Mine's a Kenmore as well. The dryer seems the things that seem to go in the dryer is the heating element mostly.
And the heating element and the sensor.
Sensor and the bearings. Yeah, I've replaced all those things.
Yeah, I've never had a mechanical issue. It's always been because I got the computerized one. It's the sensor is like the key thing that tells it how hot it is. And so I've replaced that twice. And actually one time mice got into the heating element and they stashed. No, don't worry. Luckily they weren't there while it was on. but they stashed cat food on the heating element. So then at one point it just lit a small fire in the heating element.
No.
And of course the heating element just went pop. That's what I discovered. So needless to say, we've got rid of the mice, and I've also taped up the back with some with some duct tape.
Was this the washer or the dryer?
The dryer. Yeah.
Oh boy! Dryer. Oh wow! Okay.
I don't have a dryer. I hang them on something.
We've got three kids at home, so it's like even though I'd love to be able to hang stuff, we're just doing laundry all the time, so
I use a laundromat.
Yeah. you can just do all of it in one load.
That's an option. These massive machines. Sure. Yeah. That's an option as well. So.
Speaking of ordering, I remember the very first internet order I did. It was in 98 or 99. It was a submarine game that I ordered. The plot was you are playing the captain. And it's a kind of a movie, interactive movie, where you are making decisions. And I remember ordering it. 2 days later, someone came at my door and delivered it. And 2 weeks later, the bill came in the mail.
Oh, man.
Wow. Wow.
So I remember I was I still smile that the game came after 2 days and the bill came after 2 weeks.
So was that one of those comes first, right?
Yeah. Nowadays they don't do it that way. Was that one of those like where they filmed it like a movie and it's like choose your own adventure? Yeah, I remember those. Those are classic.
Yeah.
I had some of those that I'd play and I can't even remember what they are now, but if I ever saw them, it would be like incredibly nostalgic.
Yeah, and I remember I had for a few years I had 688 Hunter Killer, where you are playing captain on a submarine, and you could play on the internet. I remember I joined something called Sea Wolf. It is a virtual navy. Now they have all kinds of armed forces. You had to enlist. You were given your own boat, but you were they picked you a boat, and then you had to play against other people, and you had to file a report after each game. I remember after my second game, the other one who filed a report. It turned out he was an actual U.S. submarine captain who played that game in his spare time when
he was recruiting.
Yeah, I remember he filed that. I almost got him when he noted that I was very quiet in the water. So
it's funny, that would be like playing a flight simulator. You know, when you can go fly anytime you like. It's not quite the same thing. But
a friend of mine, do that. He is a train operator. He is the pilot, a train pilot, and his favorite game is Transport Tycoon.
Yeah. Well, one thing about that, or a flight sim, is that you get to go places that you couldn't. That you could not go in your own airplane, right?
And you can.
Some of them are photorealistic.
And you can do a few things. Like, what happens if I do this?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd rather do that in the simulator than in the real airplane, right?
Yeah, it makes me think. BP9. There was when I was a preteen. A game came out that was hacking.
Oh boy!
So the purpose was that you were to hack into all these mainframe systems and everything. And it was like this terminal-based thing, and it looked really hacker-esque, and it was really cool.
Yeah.
But you're hacking into fake systems. Mm-hmm. That's the game. So you just made me think of that. It just came back to me because he said, you know, it's like...
I remember reading about that game many years ago.
How Robbie got his start.
Yeah.
No, I'd already hacked all my school systems at that point.
So let's have a quick chat about routers again, because I was... prompted by our discussion on Saturday, I jumped onto my Netgear router to see what exactly was available to me in terms of locking stuff down and all that. And there's not much there, Robbie. There's not much there. Mm-hmm. There's a few checkboxes you can click, but it's not real clear what the impact of those checkboxes is. So one of my questions to you is, given the router or even the firmware to go on the router, for instance, I could put DDWRT or as you said, one of the other
8.0
firmware versions on the hardware itself. Mm-hmm. So the question I have is, what about the documentation that goes with it? How good is that documentation that goes with that firmware? Or even the whole router, like we were talking about Microtech last week. Mm. How good is the documentation to show you? And this might be something you can bring up in your series. You know, here's what it can do. But in order to figure out what it can do, how do I relate this button click or this entry in the rules with what actually happens?
I wonder if that's even one of the differences. Maybe that's an answer to your question. What's the difference? Is you've got a device like the Netgear whose firmware is meant to be, you know, step one, step two, step three, step four, and then you're done. Like that's your manual. And it's not going to ever deviate from that, right? where something like an open source firmware like DDWRT or something like Microtik. I think it's more like, here's your getting started guide, but now you need to tap into the community in order to go any further, because you're talking about like really sophisticated setups, and it's going to be the same with either DDWRT or, which is very well documented.
And it requires that you do need some knowledge of networking in order to be able to effectively apply these rules and changes.
Yes and no, because you can get into a forum and say, look, I'm new here. I'm new to networking. I need to be able to do this. What do you guys suggest? And you'll probably get some replies and even some links to documentation that'll help you get there. Okay. So if you're going to go it alone, yes, you have to have pretty good knowledge of networking.
Okay.
But if you're going to use the community.
Yeah, maybe that's something to highlight in your series when you talk about it. So
I think so.
that's just a thought.
In my experience, the biggest challenge with routers is that they use different methodologies and different terminology to do the same thing with a different router.
True, it's true.
So we've got a enterprise, I think it's I think it's an enterprise D-Link router here, rack mount D-Link router, and we actually have two of them. One's a backup, a failover. But to set up like a forward port forwarding rule on that thing is a pain in the neck.
Okay, interesting. Okay.
On like a home Netgear router or home D-Link router, it's a piece of cake. You just go in and say which address or which host name and where do you want it to go. And but here you've got to set up like all these steps of different rules to link to.
But I think that's intentional. I think that's like the Netgear is so simple, but it's also binary. This port is either open or closed.
Yep.
It's a binary decision. Whereas your router and my router, these enterprise routers are so much more sophisticated that it's non-binary. It's, yes, this port is open based upon this criteria. So it just is so much more sophisticated as far as the security goes. But you're right.
Eric, he has gone, he uses ubiquitary gear. So he has... And he has those devices can be remotely managed. So he has a management server running on our server where he can remotely configure the rules on the device on his home, on his parents' home, and the home of his brother, who are all using.
That scares me even more, because you know that being able to remotely manage a router means that if somebody
Ubiquiti does a really good job of it, though. BP9,
you have to configure which server is going to remotely manage that one. So you can't just log on remotely. You have to log on to their management server, but you have to lock that down, surely.
But you're taking this access point and telling this access point when you first configure it, I want you to be managed by this server. And you're taking the next access point and saying, I want you to be managed by this server, and this is my server.
And this management server can just as well be an internal server. It doesn't have to be on the internet.
So. But it's brilliant if you've got like because these are wireless devices, right? So you can have, let's say you had 25 acres of land. You could cover this with Ubiquiti devices that have solar panels, and you've got Wi-Fi throughout the whole place.
Yeah, and even the switches are remotely managed. So
exactly, yeah. And if one goes down, you can reroute that traffic to another one.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool.
Now you say the management server can be internal. It can be inside the network. It does not have You don't have to rely on anyone in the cloud to. Because that's my biggest concern.
It's your server.
I would not want my management server to be out in the internet somewhere, accessible. It would have to be internal.
I have that. I am with BP9. If I am going to use some gear that can be remotely managed, the management server need to be inside my house.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Guys, I hate to say it, but my producer is telling me it's time to go. It's been fun as always. Nice to see Beau.
That voice in your head.
Joined us there as well. Yeah. the other voice is telling me.
Yep.
Take it easy, everybody. Have a great afternoon. Robbie. We'll see you tomorrow.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.